listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Michael Auslan, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving Japan and its sometimes contentious relations with its neighbors. He is a resident scholar and the director of Japan Studies at the highly regarded American Enterprise Institute. Dr. Auslan is also a biweekly columnist for the Wall Street Journal Asia and the author, most recently, of Pacific Cosmopolitans, A Cultural History of U.S.-Japan Relations. Dr. Auslan, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You are, as I say, someone who studies closely Japan and how it views the neighborhood. It's safe to say, I think, that it's facing rising challenges, most obviously from China. Talk, if you would, a little bit about the state of Sino-Japanese relations at the moment and where you think they're likely to head.
Well, I think if we said they're not good, that would be putting it pretty diplomatically. This is a period where Japan's concern about its role in Asia, its security, its influence, is exacerbated not only by its natural aging and economic stagnation, but of course by the concomitant rise of China that has seen China surpass it to a higher economic position, a larger military, and quite frankly, greater political influence right now. What has particularly exacerbated the problems, there's a couple of things. One is an ongoing territorial dispute between the two over some islands that lie just off of Taiwan that have become a flashpoint and really the sort of centerpiece of the attempts of both of them to play major security roles in the region. And also you have two strong leaders in each country, democratic Japan that has elected its prime minister and given him a mandate for change, and China, in which Xi Jinping is clearly becoming the strongest communist leader since Deng Xiaoping and maybe Mao Zedong.
And he clearly sees himself as having a mandate for change as well, of a different kind altogether. We're talking with Dr. Michael Auslan of the American Enterprise Institute. He runs its Japan Studies program. He is also an author and an active contributor to the public policy debate, notably in places like the Wall Street Journal, Asia, and also at Commentary Magazine. And Dr. Auslan, I forgive me for interrupting, but you were just about to talk about what Xi Jinping's agenda is and how it, unfortunately, is likely to sit well with the Japanese.
Well, I think that the concern is that you will see an activist China under Xi Jinping, and one that reflects externally his attempts internally to instill party discipline, to deal with problems, which on the economic side we would all be very happy to see, but in other ways make China a far more assertive, if not aggressive, presence in the region. And that is something the Japanese are finally coming to grips with, that their attempts, which parallel American attempts, to create a positive working relationship with China as China's gotten stronger, has really resulted in greater tensions and more disagreements.
Mm-hmm. And more likely to come. You've touched on a couple of things that I just wanted to drill down on for a moment. With respect to China, several of our contributors here at Secure Freedom Radio, and notably Dr. Michael Pillsbury recently and Gordon Chang, have talked about super hawks now becoming more and more evident in the Xi Jinping China. And this, increasing seeming need for what has been called social engineering domestically by finding or at least conjuring a kind of foreign threat that justifies domestic repression. How does that work, if you agree that it is in fact at work in China, vis-a-vis Japan?
Well, I think what the concern from certainly from the Japanese side is that in a China that is becoming more nationalist, in a China in which the regime is attempting to divert attention from all of its failures, economic slowdown, political corruption, and the like, you have to find external enemies, you know, and focus attention on those. And Japan is the traditional one, the clearest one, the one with which China has an active territorial dispute, as I mentioned. And so there are the, I guess what we could call them, the merits of the case of a Chinese-Japanese dispute over islands or other issues. And then there's the political angle to it. And so from the perspective of Tokyo, they are not expecting a fair shake, so to speak. and are quite concerned that the Super Hawks, as we're seeing them rise in China, mean not just a political cycle or the like, but that this could be a generational shift in attitudes towards being far more, putting far more pressure on Japan as well as other countries in the region.
Yeah, indeed. And that's a particularly important point, that it's not uniquely Japan that's subject to this kind of pressure from China, but it is most especially Japan. Talk, if you would, about your very interesting piece, Michael Oslin, in Commentary Magazine about how this recent horror from the Islamic State, in which two Japanese nationals were brutally executed, is playing into the rivalry that you've just described between Beijing and Tokyo.
Well, in a way, the murder of the two Japanese hostages by ISIS really just justifies the position that Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been taking by talking about the dangers of the world that Japan faces and that Japan has to play a larger role. Now, his opposition and domestic and foreign critics, most of whom are on the left, consider him a nationalist, a hawk, a warmonger, and a danger, quite frankly. I think when you look at what he's said and what he's done, it's actually, in all honesty, been in line with many of his predecessors from the opposition party as they, too, began realizing the nature of the challenges that Japan faces. He has just been able to articulate it more and has a past of making some controversial statements and statements that certainly I and others don't support. But in general, the policies, I think, are very realistic. What ISIS, in essence, did was paint a picture far more vividly of that world of threat and danger than Abe's words could do, and in fact gave the truth to his statements that Japan can't hide. It has to decide how it wants to act in the world, and just as importantly, it has to decide what contributions it wants to try to make to maintaining stability. That type of activist Japan, that type of Japan with, so to speak, a mission in the world, is something that makes China very, very nervous and something they would like to see not happen, which is why, Frank, as soon as the Japanese began making statements, and the Prime Minister said that we're going to make the terrorists pay, Beijing stated that this was not at all about ISIS. It was simply about Japan wanting to send its armies abroad.
I wonder, Dr. Michael Oslin, whether the conditions you've just described and the absence of the United States for most purposes, despite the president's assertion, I guess they're not calling it a pivot anymore. They've come up with some other euphemism about how they're reemphasizing Asia in their new national security strategy. But the administration is, I think, not playing the kind of counterweight to China that it needs to, that we would want it to, that certainly our allies there, including Japan, would expect and have been accustomed to in the past. Do you think this might be the moment when Japan finally exercises the nuclear option that it has long had as a deterrent to the kind of aggression that may be forthcoming from China?
I don't yet, Frank. I don't think that we're at that point. This is still, first of all, this is still a very pacifist country. It is a country that is, as I mentioned, waking up to the dangers that face it. It is having a debate internally about how much more it should get involved in the world. But the nuclear option is really something that is the third rail of Japanese politics, or the holy grail, depending on how you want to put it. And it's something that I think that at this point in time, and this in terms of the current international balance, Japan going nuclear would represent a massive failure on the part of the United States. And I think if we get to that point, it really reflects a much bigger set of questions about America's shrinking role and where we go from here.
It does, for sure. And I'm afraid that we're probably approaching that point if we haven't actually gotten to it. But we'll be following it closely, as I know will you, Dr. Michael Oslin of the American Enterprise Institute. I hope you will come back to us again early and often. Thank you for the work you're doing at AEI. Keep it up. Next up, we will be speaking with Dan Gallington, who's just been fired from U.S. News and World Report for talking about Islam. What's that about? Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.